enter the host pin that is at the top of the Blog Talk Radio site.
Hello.
It says click the call menu at the top of the Skype and select dial pad.
Window dial pad.
Alright, and now enter the host pin that is at the top of the Blog Talk Radio site.
Opportunity for us, Max, today. We got a chance to be at the top of this division. Let's go out here and show these people our confidence and our swagger today. When I say, who are we? You say, Saints. When I say, are we ready? You say, how? Who are we? 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 This is New Orleans!
Oh, oh, oh!
Let's go, baby.
Let's go. We don't play much as we
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's the Tri-State Sports Guys. We're only a good 18 minutes left.
I think we're ready now, Neil. I think we're ready. We just needed the Drew Brees pump-up song to get us going. 18 minutes in. You know what it is. Especially late, baby.
Yeah, we're a little late, but, you know, we're known for being late, so you guys should expect it by now. We're actually broadcasting from Hoboken, New Jersey this week. It's the birthplace of baseball. It's the home of Frank Sinatra.
From the Shipyard Studio.
From the Shipyard Studio. No Norwalk, Connecticut this week, and that's because the host, the leader, the champion, Mike DePalma, is down in Hotlanta taping an episode of Family Feud. We wish him the best of luck. We'll know he'll probably come out on top. There's no way he will embarrass himself.
No chance. I'm thinking not only will I be disappointed if he doesn't come home with the 20 grand, I know Mike's going to be disappointed. How long have you been talking about this Family Feud for?
I think
three, 4 or 5 weeks.
I remember freshman year in college, he came in orientation and was like, I'm going to make the feud and I'm going to dominate. So, again, we wish him the best of luck. We know he's going to come back with something. It might be a VD, it might be cash. We're not really sure at this point.
Hopefully it's a lot of cash.
Since we are running late, we'll briefly go over what we're planning to talk about today. We'll touch upon the NBA Finals, the NBA Draft, maybe a minute or two on free agency. We're not really basketball guys, so just a heads up on that.
You saw what I wrote in the email about basketball.
Yeah.
Not kosher for the airwaves, but it was not a positive thing about basketball.
So we'll get into the Subway Series, Mets Yankees. We'll talk about the most recent series with the Cubs and the Indians. From there, we're going to go and the All-Star Games in a couple weeks, less than 2 weeks. So we're going to get into who we'd like to see on the field for each league. And then maybe a little bit of football news. We'll talk about the new college football playoff system, how that's going to affect the world.
Yeah.
Maybe just some miscellaneous stuff that is sports related or even not. I think there's one action item on there that might surprise you. So, kicking off the show, we have the NBA Finals were last week. Tony D's really bummed. His Thunder went down in five games.
They did. I was pretty bummed about that as well.
Man. Yeah, I think a lot of people were bummed.
Yeah. Everybody outside of the state of Florida, maybe even outside of Miami-Dade County, is probably pretty bummed.
Yeah, I think Cleveland, Ohio is still on the map somehow.
I'm surprised.
We're all surprised after especially all the reaction videos that you saw out there. You know, for one thing, the weatherman that lost his mind over not enough thunder but plenty of heat, and also the Cleveland fan on YouTube who I think is now court-ordered to wear diapers. I'm not really sure.
Whoa. I missed that one. Give me a little quick run back.
You know, typical – it is typical in my mind to flip out when you have a rival that you're going against. So, like, say it's Giants-Eagles in the NFC
right.
Championship and the Eagles win. I'm going to cry a little bit.
Right.
I'm a grown man. I'm 31, but I'll cry.
Wow.
But say, like, you're a Cowboys fan and you see the Eagles beat the Giants. Are you really crying? Are you really getting that upset? You know, I understand that they lost a huge superstar. It was the face of the city. It was probably the only thing that Cleveland has going for them.
Yeah.
But to react like they did, it's a little over the top. It's kind of like, move on. You broke up. It's time to get a new girlfriend.
Yeah, I mean, I understand Cleveland's plight. Like you said, I mean, outside of the world of sports, LeBron James was the only good thing in Cleveland left before he left.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of do understand how upset they are. But, yeah, there comes a certain point when, you know, you need to kind of move on. I mean, they have Kyrie Irving. You know, they have a good young player. I mean, the team, it's funny because the Cleveland basketball team is probably better than any fan expected that they would be if LeBron at this point after LeBron James's exit, and yet you still kind of find that they don't even care about that. It's like, yeah, they care about that when they're at the games, but outside of being at the games for those 48 minutes, it's a hate LeBron fest, not a let's root on our Cavs, which is unfortunate because, you know, I kind of feel like that bad karma came back to bite him a little bit. And the Heat, you know, did their thing. LeBron got his championship. And you know what? Hopefully it teaches the Cavs fans a lesson that, you know, eventually you need to let go and give up on the grudge.
Yeah, and I mean, where do you stand on the Hate LeBron campaign? Are you an avid supporter? Do you feel like it's unjustified? I mean, where are you on the spectrum?
Well, I actually blogged a little bit about this last week. I went to a class at CSB, and it was like a workshop or whatnot. And I referred to the Miami Heat as the treacherous trio. So, you know, I'm definitely on the LeBron hating campaign. I think, you know, more than anything for me, I think it's just more fun to hate him. You know, I think it makes for better radio, better TV, because people can debate until the cows come home. You know, how great is he? Can you compare him to Michael? There's so many things, whether they be positive or negative, to be said. The negative ones, you know, tend to draw people's attention. And, you know, you look at the news, it's 80% negative. So it's more fun to be negative. It sells more. It gets more ratings to be negative. So I'm all about the Hate LeBron campaign. But at the same time, you know, he deserves a ring. He's one of the best players ever to lace up a pair of shoes. And I kind of compared him talent-wise to the late Len Bias. I don't think anybody has seen a talent like LeBron James.
Heavy cocaine user.
Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah, I mean, all the off-the-court stuff, you know, obviously the skeletons are just waiting to come out of LeBron's closet. But, no, in all seriousness, you know, both big guys that, you know, could shoot a little bit and play, you know, beyond their position. And a guy like that deserves a ring, you know. It makes me feel bad for a guy like Charles Barkley a little bit. He's, you know, he's the type of guy as well that, you know, not as talented as LeBron, but, you know, worked pretty hard and, you know.
Yeah, I don't know though. I mean, he's got Weight Watchers, so.
He does. He's got the marketing edge over LeBron.
Yeah.
We'll give him that. That's what it is.
But you know, I've been wavering back and forth on the opinion on LeBron and whether or not I should hate him, because it seems like a lot of it's unjust. And you know, if he was any other player on Earth, I don't think he would get the kind of criticism that he gets. And you know, I think sometimes his mouth does get him in trouble, you know, promising all those rings or whatever. But it's just, to a certain extent, it's overstated, you know, how the criticism that he gets. It's just, in my mind, you know, there was a video of him celebrating afterwards, and he's rapping along with the LMFAO, and he's wearing a shirt with his face on it or something like that. And, you know, it's like, the guy's allowed to celebrate.
Absolutely.
You know, but, you know, okay, so maybe the celebration is not how you would celebrate, but the guy won his first championship. Let him let loose. Let him celebrate.
Yeah.
I will say, though, in terms of celebration, Chris Bosh needs to tone it down and rethink his life.
Yeah, he needs to figure it out a little bit. I don't know exactly what he was doing. I mean, he did a good job at kind of getting rid of the whole predator thing when they cut the hair, but I think he did a really great job of just gaining it back the way he just slurped up all that champagne like you've never seen it before. Dude, you make millions of dollars. You drink Cristal at the club all the time. Like, yeah, dump it on yourself and whatever, but, like, to lick it around you, like, the tongue action was over the... You know what? Every pro athlete's going to party and, you know, drink their champagne and dump it on themselves and pour it on their teammates, but when you're, like, moving your tongue around like that with a bunch of other sweaty men, it's just not my thing.
Yeah.
Not my thing.
I mean, I don't
see how that was cool at all. Appropriate, whatever. Maybe it's appropriate, but it's just not cool.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting someone to ask for my credit card information after I saw that. there's a photographer, an event photographer, his name's Kirill, and he just started a Tumblr called Champagne Facials, and it's basically just really nice pictures of women taking huge sprouts of champagne to the face. And now I know that, you know, Chris Bosh can now appear on that site and really bring a celebrity status to the site.
I don't have a comment on that, Neil. I do not have a comment. I'm thinking about champagne facials, my friend. You lost me there, but I'm glad you did. I appreciate it.
But in the celebration phase of this championship, you also have to wonder, you know, so Bosh lost his mind. LeBron might have gone a little bit over the top. Then you have a person like Juwan Howard who says, "We shock the world." I mean, where does that kind of statement come from when they were pretty much the favorite throughout?
I'm pretty sure Juwan's still living in 93 with the Fab Five, and he busted that one out from his old days. Maybe his boy Jalen Rose was like, "Hey, that would be a good thing to say. You know, we shocked the world. Like, you can say that again. Now you won your championship, you know?" I don't know what he's thinking. I was happy to see him get in the game at the end. I thought that was pretty cool. And I overall, I like Juwan Howard. I like
the
Fab Five.
And he threw up one of the worst shots I've ever
seen.
Yeah,
like,
dude, did you stretch out?
Off the side of the backboard, wasn't it, or something crazy? One of them went off the side of the backboard. I saw that.
Yeah, and so, you know, good for him. Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing, Neil. We're talking about the celebrations and the issues that we have and all these things. You know what? I have more of an issue with Juwan Howard and, you know, saying that because it's just not true. They were the favorites. I mean, although they weren't the favorites, they were, you know, it'd be a team that was expected to win. Obviously, Chris Bosh is a dork, and that's ridiculous. And LeBron's celebration, I thought, was all right. Like, he can wear a T-shirt. If anyone can wear a T-shirt with his face on it, it's LeBron James. So I'm all right with that. The bigger issue I have is did you see the Nike commercial that they put out?
No, I blacked out.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Did you see that? I've never seen a more pretentious commercial in my life where it goes through every time he was in the finals and made it real close and they're making rings and then the ring guy stops in 06 or 05 when they played San Antonio. Then he stops again last year when he loses to Nowitzki. It's just I don't get it. And he stops again when he gets eliminated by Boston.
Yeah, see,
unbelievable.
This is why I keep wavering back and forth, because just when I think, okay,
same thing,
it's undue, all this criticism, it's undue, then Nike goes and airs that commercial, and you're like, oh, great. Now I hate LeBron again.
Yeah, and it's almost like it's Nike's thing. It's like they're like almost want to paint him as a villain.
Like they
sell more shoes.
Yeah, like they spent all those, you know, off-season hours working out in the gym and, you know, that they've gone through all that pain and struggle with them. And it's like, guys, come on, you make shoes and you make apparel.
I know,
but
right?
I know that they're in for that in-depth experience. They try and really connect with the fan and with the player or whatever, but you got to take a step back and say, hey, we make shoes. You know, a simple congrats, LeBron.
Yeah,
would have done wonders. But you know,
how about a congrats LeBron with just like a shadow of a ring or something like that? You want to bring the ring into it? Sure, he got his ring, he won it. Great. You know what? You should want to play to that in your advertising. That's smart business.
Yeah.
But to paint your franchise guy, your Michael Jordan, you know, the next guy that you literally created a LeBron brand out of, like, in such a pretentious, stuck up, like, turn my nose up to you way. I don't understand that. And that's the feeling I got. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe we're in the minority, Neil. I don't know. But you know what? Everybody seems to hate LeBron, so I'm thinking they might share similar views.
But the big disappointment for me is I can no longer put my phone on silent and call it LeBron mode.
Nice.
So there's no ring?
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
That's now gone. You've now taken that away from me, LeBron. I hope you're happy. So on the flip side of things, well, the one last thing on the Heat. There were a couple of hideous porn stars that promised to give pleasures orally, fellate their followers if the team won. Just from a logistics standpoint, I mean,
they must not have many followers.
They must not have many followers, but if they do, even if you're at the 1,000 mark, you're going to be busy for the next year, right?
I think they're professionals.
They are professionals.
I don't know if it's going to take
them. This is gratis. This is free of charge. They're not. I mean, they're not getting any money for that.
That they may be expecting tips.
Okay. Yeah. I could.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it might be a no tip, no action sort of deal.
Right.
It might not be so bluntly put as I did, but it might be an eloquent kind of
now,
transaction.
If you're a Heat fan, you're really excited about this. But then you she's now. She's now at number 32,594. I mean, are you quadruple bagging it? What exactly are you thinking when you go into that? You're like, yeah, actually, you know what? Let's just say it happened and, you know, you can sign this for me.
Can we say triple bagging in the radio? I guess we can now. I like that. I might be quadrupling that.
Yeah.
I might be. I might be at that point just kind of like, eh.
I just never understood.
I'm good.
And this isn't the first time it's happened.
Okay, sure not.
There was another adult film star from, you know, Croatia or something that said that, you know, she would do the same thing to her followers if the team won the World Cup or something like that. And now it's actually happened, and they have to come, you know, through on their side of the bargain. And it's like, it sounds like it would get old pretty quick.
Yeah, I definitely get old real quick for the ladies involved. How about this though? I'm gonna throw a little devil's advocate at you, a little what if at you. What if, you know, this is all well and good, and what if these 32,685 guys show up and they're like, no. What happens then? What can they do? Can they bring in the small claims court? Like,
yeah, I don't know.
It's written, I guess, on Twitter. I mean, it's kind of a. Is that a binding contract we need to get now? We need to get lawyers involved?
I think they did some backtracking once the Heat won. And, you know, and that's why we've never encountered something like this, because it's usually some star that goes out on a limb. You know, it's
right.
Something that will probably never happen. You know, the Heat winning is not that big of a stretch. And so
yeah.
You can see, I think they tweeted about it afterwards. They were like, well, we'll figure something out. And you know, there's like five guys out there who just were living for this. Not for the Heat winning. Well, I mean, you know,
5,000 maybe.
Being one of them, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I followed them right the day before game six or game five. So what does that make me look like?
Here's the thing, though. They do that for the followers, but then it's like, okay, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, and then you unfollow.
That would be, I guess, that could be the biggest slap in the face.
Is that part of
all these guys? No, like, if this doesn't happen, all these 34,000 guys, like, get together on Twitter and unfollow at the same time. Imagine how devastating that would be to those girls. They would get so upset. They would go fillet half the city after that because they wanted to feel good about themselves. So, guys, if you're listening down there, if you're part of the 34,969 that follow those two strippers promising fellatio, get together, band together, however you got to do it on Facebook, etc. Unfollow those brawls.
Just drop them.
At the same time.
Drop them.
Make them feel bad. Make them wish that they could collate you.
It could become an epidemic. We could be staring in the face of just a rampant, like, wildfire across the nation. And, you know, I guess I'll line up for it. I don't have much else going on. But
I'm happy the Yankees are profound winners. I'll take that. There are crazy, crazy ladies in this city, so I'll take that. Thank you very much, New York Yankees.
So, real quick, on the flip side of things, it sucks for the Thunder. Obviously, their defense collapsed in the third quarter. I mean, I could not believe what I was watching, the fact that the Heat could go on a roll like that. You just don't see runs like that, especially in the playoffs, especially in the finals. But, you know, you have to tip your hat to Mike Miller, who just absolutely caught fire. The guy can barely stand up, and he went 7 of 8 from behind the three-point arc.
Yeah, Mario, that was pretty incredible.
You know, Mario, I mean, all three of the contributing players, Chalmers, Battier, and Miller, stepped up, whereas in previous games you'd have one of them kind of take the lead. And, you know, it's good to see – I guess it's good to see Shane Battier win a ring. You know, I
kind of like him.
Yeah, there are people that have their issues with him. But, you know, him and Chalmers contributing way above their averages. But as far as the Thunder go, there were a lot of people saying, hinting and intimating that they would become a dynasty. And I want to get your take on it, because I don't really think that there's such a thing as a dynasty anymore, especially in basketball. You know, and they show the contract.
Like the Lakers, though, last few years. I feel like if you win two in a row, I feel like you win anything back-to-back, and nowadays that can be considered a dynasty. But the word is, right, watered down. I agree.
Yeah, and to me, a dynasty is like, well, you have that core, a somewhat core group of players that stick together for that championship run, maybe. Or maybe you just need that one figurehead that is there throughout.
That guy.
Yeah, that one guy.
That MJ, that Kobe, that et cetera.
But, you know, you look at the two contracts that are up after next season, Harden and Ibaka. Harden has said he'll come back, which is good. You know, I don't know. He kind of pooped the bed.
I think that's a smart move for him. I think he kind of showed, or kind of not showed his true colors, but showed why he is coming off the bench in that series. Because if you force him to do things outside of his comfort zone, he really can't get back into that comfort zone quickly.
Yeah, and I mean, I would like to see, he's a good six man, and I've always wanted him to come in and be, you know, someone more than that, because he showed such promising glimpses throughout the playoffs, you know, scoring 30 off the bench. But, you know, my main beef with him was the fact that he would drive to the basket, but he would, like, literally run into people.
Yeah.
You know, they would put his shoulder. Well, he would try to create fouls, but there's creating fouls and seeing an opening, and then there's seeing no opening and trying to create a foul, which I just think, you know, he did it multiple times, and it hurt them on you know, plays where they're trying to get back in the ball game. They got a good rebound. It looks like they're you know, starting a rally, starting a run of their own, and then he'll just dip a shoulder into someone and take and get an offensive foul, and it's like you just kind of ruin the momentum.
Yeah.
But you know, the other piece of the puzzle is Ibaka. You know, obviously he's huge defensively, but I think he kind of came up short in the finals, you know, especially in the last game. So in my mind, I don't know if Ibaka is a central piece of the puzzle. I think that if they could go out and pull in someone, you know, obviously I don't think they're going to get Dwight Howard, but you know, if you're Dwight Howard, you know, why not? I know it's not a huge market. Your endorsement deals are probably slim, but you know, Durant got a commercial out I saw the other day, and you know, you have other pieces there. I mean, what do you think Dwight Howard's opposition is to going to OKC?
I mean, I don't know if he's got an opposition or if that would just never work, but he seems like he wants to be the big fish with friendly, medium-sized fish around him. And if he went to OKC, they've already kind of bought in the Westbrook, and he would be an outsider coming in.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's strong enough mentally or emotionally to kind of put himself in that situation to be almost a villain within his own team.
Right.
You know, I mean, at this point, he's avoided all of that, even by, you know, getting his coach fired and, you know, complaining about the general manager in the front office and making moves. And I think if he went to OKC, he would get painted like LeBron. And I think he's trying to avoid that at all costs. And hence the reason, you know,
yeah,
he's kind of
LeBron,
in the net.
Yeah, but after LeBron wins the ring, doesn't that kind of make it seem more appealing now? See, that one championship now says, hey, it works. Let's do it.
Yeah, but not. I don't think it would make it more appealing in that setting. I think it makes it more appealing maybe for him to go to the Lakers.
Yeah.
But not OKC, just because, like, you know, like you said, with Harden wanting to come back and Ibaka wanting to come back, they are kind of have all their guys. They're really only a few outskirt pieces away from being. I mean, they could take the same team back to the NBA Finals again. I don't know if they can beat the Heat, but they can get through the West unless Dallas makes significant upgrades, and for San Antonio, you got to think San Antonio's not going to have the same type of year.
Yeah.
You got to think that they're going to regress back to the mean a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the short season helped them out a little bit because it gave, you know, the coach an excuse to kind of rest guys and sit them at the end of the year when games didn't really matter. And I don't think they're going to have that luxury next year with a regular schedule. They're going to have to win more games. It's going to have to be different. But I just don't think that Dwight would feel comfortable in that spot. And I don't think that he wants to be the outsider in a room with Durant, Westbrook, and Harden.
Well, I will say this as we transition from the finals. You know, my final point would be,
Dwight Howard can be a big physical kind of guy, a big presence down low, and I don't think offensively, and I don't think the OKC had that this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's something to consider. It's definitely a long shot, but you know, I don't think he's like, you know, chirping about the fact that he might be ending up with the Houston Rockets. I don't think that's something that's making him smile. But
no, definitely not. His people have already put out there that if he gets traded there, he's not going to sign a long-term deal. So, we'll see who really – it's funny how these big basketball stars really control their own fate and really can dictate to what the general managers can do with the given team.
In other NBA news, real quick, the draft's tomorrow night. You know, obviously Anthony Davis is going number one. A whole bunch of discussion and chatter about who's going to go 2-10. I honestly can't speak to it. I don't know that you can, but – the one thing that sticks out
not
to me.
Not my forte.
Yeah, not my forte. But the one thing that sticks out to me for Anthony Davis, I don't know if you heard the news, but he trademarked the phrases fear the brow and raise the brow to kind of own his unibrow.
Why not just shave it? Pluck it. Right?
But I can understand, okay, you come
is
up.
Using the brow as a marketing tool?
He is. Using the unibrow
obviously.
As a marketing
tool. I mean, obviously that's what he is. It's fairly apparent, but why?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, does he not have faith in anything else that he's got going on for him? I mean, it's hard to believe that, you know, a piece of hair between your two eyebrows is really going to, you know, make you stand up. But then again, Michael Strahan had a gap in his tooth that was kind of trademarked. But I don't think he trademarked it.
I don't think he's like feared the gleek better than everybody else. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he did that. But I mean, part of this seems so gimmicky to me, and it would scare me a little bit about him. I'm thinking as a general manager, I'm thinking super, super, super cynical, right? So I'm thinking fear the brow. Like, what does he feel like he needs the number one trademark? So when I draft him, he's not going to shave his dopey unibrow on my professional basketball team. He's going to keep that? Really? Okay. Number one, that's a little bit of a lack of maturity, in my opinion, because as an adult, you should – as an NBA star, you should want to keep your appearance a certain way. Number two, it's like, okay, so fear the brow. Like, did he use that in college? Like, he thought he looked meaner than everyone else, and people feared his brow? Because I'll tell you right now, our guy Dwight Howard is not going to fear the brow.
Yeah.
You know? Joel Anthony is
not going
to fear the brow.
Yeah, I actually hope someone, like, gets in, like, a little bit of scuffle down with him underneath in the paint, and they try and rip off his
brow. I was about to say, try to pluck it with their fingers. Or someone brings, imagine if someone brought, like, this is the NFL, like, you got Joe Horn with the cell phone.
Yeah.
Someone brings out tweezers after they dunk on Anthony Davis, like, what up? Picking out unibrow hairs. I don't know.
It seems like a waste of time and effort. I mean, there's a thousand ways that you can't actually trademark the term unibrow, I don't think. I'm pretty sure.
No, I don't think
it's off limits.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how that works. I don't know how trademarking
works. I just think legally that sounds like a nightmare.
I
would not want to be his lawyer. But anyway.
No.
So that's the draft. And then moving on to the free agency, again, this is an area where I can't really speak to it. I know that Deron Williams is probably the top free agent out there.
One of them, yeah.
And, it's between – so far it looks like it's between the Nets and with Dallas. People are like, oh, he's definitely going to Dallas. And then other people are saying that, well, you know, he just had like a birthday party with the Nets coach. And it seems like things are really going well there. So if you had to, you know, gun to your head, had to pick, like, where do you think he's going to end up? Is it going to be Brooklyn or Dallas? What are your thoughts?
I think it's going to be Brooklyn only because he spent all that time in New Jersey just to see what it's going to be like in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
He moved now. I don't
understand
why he would do that.
Yeah.
I mean, but you never know, man, because Mark Cuban could throw a lot of money his way and be like, listen, we got one more run in Dirk. You can win. We'll give you a one-year deal. You can go back to Brooklyn for all I care.
Right.
See if we can, you know, he could do something crazy like that and make it completely worth his while and give him 2 years, $35 million, and say, listen, if we don't win it or something happens, you know, I'll try to work out a deal and trade you in that second year. Or make it an option year and you can make a decision afterwards.
Right.
Mark Cuban would do something like that. He's got the money, you know, and that's home for him. Where he wants to – that's kind of where his heart is. And, you know, he really respects Dirk. I know that they have a great relationship. And, you know, I'm really 55-45, but I'm going to say Brooklyn.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to see him stay in Brooklyn. I mean, I wasn't a huge Nets fan like Mike D, but, you know, I think there's such a positive energy coming around Brooklyn. You know, Dallas has won. Dallas got their trophy. You know, I'd like to see the trophy, you know, come back to the Northeast. So I'd like to see him stay with New Jersey. In other NBA news, Amari Stoudemire, you probably heard about his infamous tweet in which he called one of his followers that criticized him what the British call a cigarette.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad gay slur.
It was a pretty bad gay slur.
Yeah, that's how we'll put that.
And he got fined a 50 large, which is pretty intense when you think about it. I mean, I know it's
wait for a tweet.
For one
most
tweet.
Most expensive tweet ever.
Guinness Book of World Records, thank you.
I want a footnote.
I think, I think Kim Kardashian gets paid like $10,000 for one promoted tweet, and he got fined $50,000, especially when you think about some of the other stuff that has gone on, the fines that have been levied for that. You know, and what boggles my mind the most about it is Amari is no rookie. It's not like he's new to the game. It's not like I don't think he's that new to Twitter.
Yeah.
And, you know, the guy just got married, didn't he? Or he got engaged?
I don't know, but he was supposedly one of, he looked up to Amari all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Now he's one of his biggest fans. I mean, the only problem I have really with it, I read the tweet. I thought it was kind of funny. The whole game is kind of funny. I'm going to be honest. You know, I'm not a proponent of, you know, throwing gay slurs around like that because that's offensive to so many people out there. But that's really the only problem I had with it because, you know what? He's right. He doesn't have to care what this kid thinks.
No,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And you know what? All these people on Twitter begging for retweets, begging for birthday tweets, thinking that these celebrities care about them. Hey, first of all, half the time it's not even a real celebrity. It's their publicist or a team of publicists.
Yeah.
You think Kim Kardashian has enough time to send out 50,000 tweets a day while she's shopping or doing whatever else she does?
Six tapes.
Yeah, you know, hooking up with Kanye West and Ferraris or whatever she's doing. But come on, guys. Let's be serious. Athletes don't care about us. As a fan, they want you to go to the game. They want you to cheer them on. They want you to be a fan of the team. They want you to cheer them on. And you know what? They understand when you criticize and boo a lot of them. You know, obviously everybody's human. Some people are more delicate than others. But you know what? Whatever. But they don't care. They don't care about your opinion. They don't even care about the sports writers and the columnists that do it for a living. They tune it all out. The good ones, you know, 80% of them do.
Yeah.
And the ones that listen, if they only get, they're only affected negatively for it. So you know what? Kid, sorry. But as harsh and blunt as Amari was, he's right. It doesn't matter.
Real
he doesn't
problem.
Care. He doesn't have to give an F what you think effort. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So in that perspective, I don't even care about it. I think it's funny that.
But I would rather
grab the meat. This is what will grab headlines nowadays.
It
I think it's funny.
Oh, it's hilarious that a tweet can cause so much disruption and you know create such buzz. But I think instead of fining him $50,000. Why not have him go on a promotional gay nightclub tour across the U.S.?
They should have sent him. There wasn't a gay pride week.
Gay pride
weekend?
Yeah.
I walked through a baseball game on Sunday.
It should have been the chief, the master ceremonies.
Yeah.
Have him lead the
like lighting the torch, like at the Olympics or something like that, you know? Like a great moment like Muhammad Ali in you know, Salt Lake. We got the Mari in the West Village with a rainbow haircut.
Yeah, and, you know, 2-for-1 drinks at Rawhide. That's the kind of thing we're dealing with here.
Mojitos.
You got to think outside the box of the David Stern. Anyway.
Yeah.
So, and finally in NBA news, if you're a Knicks fan, Lynn and Novak were granted early bird rights, which obviously we know to mean that they can now get early bird pricing at any restaurant like Denny's or Golden Corral.
Right. That's right. At any time, right?
At any
senior special, right?
So instead of it being 4-7, you get half off your waffles. You can now get that 24/7. Congrats to Jeremy Lynn.
Yeah,
and Novak.
For Jeremy Lin, that's probably awesome for him.
Oh, that's huge.
Huge.
Until he gets a new contract, that's huge.
Yeah.
So moving on to Major League Baseball, Subway Series went down Friday, Saturday, Sunday. As you all know, JT is a major
Yankee
fan.
Oh,
no. I am a Mets fan.
Before you start anything, what I need to do is for all you Mets fans out there, everyone listening, Mike, Neil, sitting right next to me, I want to thank you personally from the bottom of my heart for once again sandwiching the Yankees in a Subway Series and propelling them in the middle of that sandwich to the top of the AL East and the American League and Major League Baseball for a time. I don't know if they still have the best record in baseball. I've forgotten because it's been so many days, but I think they might. And I just from the bottom of my heart, from a Long Islander, from a Yankee fan, from a New Yorker, thank you so much.
I think Mike,
every year. It's been about the best 10 years since since 97.
You know,
thank you.
Well, you know, I know Mike D will be certainly happy about your speech.
He's probably curling right now down in the ATL. We're going to get a call. He's going to call. Watch. I bet you bumped up. Let's see. Mike, you're out there.
So, yeah, okay, the Mets have lost 5 of 6. Not a good look. You have to admit the Mets were, and, you know, Yankees fans make fun of us all the time for looking on the bright side, but we did stick in a bunch of games considering the firepower the Yankees have offensively.
Great games.
You know, but it just goes to show that the Mets have a very long, far way to go.
Yeah.
You know, and there were a couple of opportunities in that series where Terry Collins could have stepped in and changed the direction of the ballgame. I feel like leaving in Chris Young and not putting in Tim Burdick when he's facing, I think it was the Baez.
Mm-hmm.
Was brutal. I think if you bring in Burdick, he probably will have great success against Ibanez, and they can hold the lead and possibly win the game.
Not only that, it's something. I mean, every time you make a pitching change, it breaks up the momentum and the flow of the offense. I mean,
yeah,
you know that.
And Chris was throwing a great ball game, and to see him lose that was tough. And also, you know, Miguel Bautista against Robinson Cano. Robinson Cano is such a great hitter, and I know there was a situation there where Burdick, you think, oh, Burdick, lefty on lefty, but again, Terry had the numbers in mind. He knew that Burdick is not that successful against Cano. I don't know who is, to be honest.
He's so good.
Well, the thing with Cano is, I think the Mets should have probably just stood on the bases or put people on the bases, like fans on the bases, so that Cano thought that there were people in runners in scoring position.
Yes.
And that way he would ground out or strike out.
Yeah, he's hitting on the interstate this year.
Yep.
Runners in scoring
under 200 with runners in scoring position, which is insane considering his numbers.
I was about to say, he's still hitting like 310 with 17 bombs and like 30-plus 40 RBIs or something like that.
He's into a really relaxed, chill, no-pressure situations where he can just mash.
Well, that's why look at him out there. It looks like he's not even trying. I love it. I know he is, but he's so smooth.
So, you know, the highlight from game one, you know, if the Mets don't get that early start, who knows if they win. You know, Francisco kind of backs up his mouth, you know, quote-unquote shutting down the chickens, but at the same time, he has the oblique injury. Now he's on the DL.
Yeah, and I'm bummed. I'm bummed because I have him on my fantasy team. But thank you for getting me that last save. I have a question. Where did that come from? You know this team better than a lot most.
I don't know. Well,
what is that? I don't understand. Like, what did we ever? Yankees don't say two words about anything to anybody.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit to the Red Sox, but not especially the Mets.
And you don't think that the Mets would need any added impetus or motivation to go against the Yankees? I mean,
nor do you want to give the Yankees any more motivation, right?
Exactly. And
you think Derek Jeter likes being called a chicken? You know, you think CeCe Sabathia likes being called a chicken? Nomar Teixeira, those are proud.
But also, I think the Yankees are at the point now where they're all veterans and that kind of stuff slides off their back. I mean, I don't know that it influences them that much.
I don't think it influences them off the field and in preparation, but in between the lines for those 3 hours, I think it might. You know, certain guys might walk up there to the bat, like a guy like Nick Swisher, like, oh, yeah, you don't think we're chicken? And that gives him a little bit of an extra edge at the plate. And I don't understand why you would ever want to give anybody, especially the Yankees lineup, an extra edge at the plate. You know how it is when you're up there and you're kind of all on a little bit of a mean streak and everyone's, you know, battling and fighting tooth and nail and really trying to hit the ball right back through the middle. It's a lot harder to get through those lineups than when you have a bunch of guys that, you know, think they're going to crush you and, you know, they're trying to drop bombs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, unless they do it, you're going to get a lot of ground balls and whatnot, but I wouldn't want to do anything to toughen up a Yankee lineup.
No, not at all. And, well, the thing that stood out to me, and I texted this to Mike D during the game, but he was at a wedding, so I don't think he could see it, is that Francisco reminds me in a lot of ways of Armando Benitez. He has the same kind of build. The numbers are similar.
Benitez
is 49. You know, Francisco's 48. They're, you know, I think Benitez brought the heat more, but that's because he was on the juice. And so that worries me a lot, and I think now there's this discussion that Francisco's out, that the Mets will bring back K-Rod, which would be just the weirdest series of events that I can imagine. I mean, you know, K-Rod kind of went out and was supposed to come in here and be the savior in terms of shutting people down. We hadn't had a closer that could come and be lights out. You know, K-Rod comes in and
Billy Wagner, right?
Yeah. So he comes in and he doesn't really fulfill expectations. The Mets don't go anywhere and they dish him. And now to bring him back, I don't know if I want him back. I mean, I understand that he's a good arm, or still considered a good arm, but I feel like he's bringing back that bad mojo and juju. I don't want that anywhere. You know, even with Carlos Beltran, he's having an incredible year, an MVP type year.
That would make more sense to me.
But I don't want him.
Offense is a anemic.
Oh, it's definitely anemic. But I almost don't want him back because I feel like he'll fall back into his old ways. You know, if there's something about the Mets uniform that scares certain people off, or like it's like kryptonite to certain players.
I just think certain situations are better for certain people. I mean, I think maybe Carlos, you know, he did well in Houston. He played well in Kansas City. You know, he probably just likes that Midwest atmosphere a little more. Played well there, you know?
Yeah.
I don't understand why the Mets would bring back K-Rod for what reason? To save a few more games this year, you know? So you're 79 and 83 instead of 75 and whatever. I mean, that's probably where you think you're going to shake out if by the time the year's over. Why not give Bobby Parnell a chance, see what he's got, even if he fails a few times. Let him work through it, see if he's got the mental makeup to work through failing as a closer, because that's important as well. I don't understand why a lot of these managers, you know, give a guy a shot, especially on teams that aren't very good. They fail a little bit in the beginning, and then they automatically give him the hook. That kills a guy's confidence. I mean, there's a certain thing. There's certain things to be said about closers that can struggle for a few games in a row and then come back on the horse. Even a guy like Mariano, when he struggles, it's not just one game. It's one or two games here. You know, it's a game this week, a game next week, and then he's great for 6 weeks. It's not, I mean, guys have lulls and you know, peaks and valleys. And, you know, so you give the guy the ball and he's in a valley. You know what? Eventually he's going to come up and regress back to the mean. You gave him the ball in that inning because he's a good pitcher. And then if you didn't, then you shouldn't be managing the team. You shouldn't be managing the team. Those are my stance. I think there's no reason, again, why they would ever bring him back. And not to mention the fact that it just brings back those bad growths. It's like you got bugs crawling all over your skin memories kind of for the Mets, you know?
Yeah, and you could tell heading into the Cubs series. I mean, the Cubs have the worst record in baseball. This is an opportunity for the Mets to kind of wash away the bitter sting of the defeat against the Yankees.
Yeah.
To come back with a sweep. And then they looked atrocious in the first game against the Cubs. They had 2-3 base errors back-to-back.
Whoa.
And then game two, you figure, okay, well, they got the other system. They were kind of expected to lose because it was, you know, they had to travel the next day. It was a late night, sunny night. So maybe they were exhausted, blah, blah. And then game two, they don't win it all again. They get down 4-3, and they're runners on base for the Cubs. The has a snap throw down to Ike, and it looks like he definitely, you know, blocked the bag with his leg and then tagged him out on the left arm with his glove. Umpire calls him safe. Ike flips his lid, goes after the umpire, places his glove on, and the umpire tosses him.
You can't be doing that.
Well, I don't think he knew he was doing it. You know, you have to be kind of mindful of that stuff when you're on the field. But, again, I think it was just, you know, he at the moment, he just could not believe that an umpire could mess up a call that bad.
Yeah.
So the Cubs then go on to score an insurance run. The next inning, Ike gets up. Ike would have gotten up to the plate with people on base to tie the game. But, no, they have Omar Quintanilla come up.
Quintanilla?
So, you know, that was, you know, unfortunate series of events.
Yeah.
And, you know, luckily they came back today and they just absolutely trounced the Cubs 17-1. And
there you
go. It seems like everyone and their brother was hitting home runs out there. You know, Daniel Murphy broke up his 350-plus at-bat slump of not having a home run going with two home runs in the game. You know, the grand slams, and it seems like everyone's hitting. The thing that, you know, you hate to complain about a win like that, but at the same time, I can't not complain about it, because it's like, where was that for the prior two games? Where was any of those? I hate when they stack up runs like that in one game. You almost want to ration the runs and save and be like, hey, it's like AT&T carryover minutes.
Yeah,
you
want
to carry over those runs. So that,
those
like
five we scored in the seventh. You know, put a rain check on them.
Yeah, can we retroactively
for a later date?
Yeah, retroactively apply those.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's good, and I think, you know, and it does give the momentum going into L.A. You know, before the All-Star break, they have L.A., Philly, and then Cubs again back at City. L.A. is now without Ethier.
Ethier's
hurt.
When did that happen? He's on my team.
He got hurt.
Oh, my God. I'm getting crushed, Neil. Jeez, your boy Francisco with the chicken statement put a hex on my whole fantasy team. I got Markham. Oh, my whole team is going down. Jesus, Christmas. Thank God I got Chase Utley.
Yeah. Well, Chase Utley is coming back.
He had a home run today.
He did.
Yeah, he did. He had a home run today. Oh, it's Andy Pettit getting beat up.
So you got to have a little bit of confidence in the Mets going to L.A. They never have success in L.A., but you're hoping that they can –
at least win a series, if not sweep. Philly will be a little tougher with Chase back. And, of course, the Cubs, they got to sweep before the All-Star break. That's huge for them.
Yeah,
so
at least two.
At least two, but I think even not getting a sweep is just horrendous at this point because the Cubs are so bad.
Yeah, the Cubs are bad, but it's still baseball. You know, like, it's like any team can win on any given day. Plus, I kind of feel like the Cubs have had the Mets number over the past few years, even when they've been bad.
So now transitioning to the Yankees. The Yankees are just straight up on fire.
Yeah, I mean,
they've been mashing, and then, you know, today,
even though they win.
You know, the big news coming out of Yankees camp is that CC's got the strained groin. He's going on the 15-day out. He's going to miss two starts. Then you have Andy.
They're talking about getting him back in mid-July, though, so
yeah.
I don't know if it's as bad, but definitely a bigger story because he's the ace.
Because he's the ace, and it's not so much, you know, I think you're still going to get good pitching out of the people that are filling in, but, it definitely takes a toll on you emotionally when you see two of your big guns, you know, in casts and in slings and on the bench and injured. So, and of course, the other big news story is Andy Pettit took a ground ball from Casey Kotchman off the ankle, and it's fractured, and it looks like he's going to be out for 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, that's an unfortunate, you know, again, another unfortunate set of events. Yeah, that's really kind of killing my team right now. To kind of have it all happen in one day when you put CC on the DL and then this happens in Pettit's start today, albeit a win for the Yankees, which is at least something positive, you know, a little bit of a glass half full perspective, but it's going to hurt them. I mean, they're going to have Freddie Garcia come back into the rotation, which, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it's definitely not, I'm not happy about it. And then you have to plug a hole, you know? I mean, you had, you know what, the CC thing for a few weeks. You got to spot start Garcia. You can probably almost even get around it because you got an extra day here and there and the All-Star break and whatnot. You know, so that's whatever. But this Pettit thing really kills them because it's another hole that they have to plug for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And that means that Freddie Garcia is in the rotation for 6 weeks. And you might as well just get comfortable. And then whoever they bring in will get bounced when CC's healthy again. So it's not looking good for the rotation.
Does it even matter at this point? I just feel like offensively, there's such a firepower, there's such a powerhouse that, you know, do they really need someone to come in and shut down versus, you know, just don't give up more runs than us?
I think it does because I think like you said, it's a psyche thing. I mean, having CC take the rubber, toe the rubber every fifth day is an important psyche thing for that team, knowing that, you know, and not even for the offense because they're so professional, but I think it's a psyche thing for the bullpen because they know that when CC toes the rubber, he's going to give them five at the minimum. You know, very rarely does he go less than five. And it's going to be a day that they're not going to have to work as hard. I think now there's more strain on the bullpen because not only do you have to pick up the slack for starters that aren't really regular starters in your rotation, but you're losing your long man in Freddie Garcia,
right,
who had kind of been pitching well out of that role and, you know, was a little bit of a mentor for some of those younger guys, the Clay Rapatas, even the David Robertsons, who's, you know, he's a veteran now. He's, you know, 25, 26 years old. He hasn't been in the league that long, you know. I mean, yeah, he won the World Series in 2009, but he was a kid back then, a true kid. Now he's a little seasoned. I think this not only hurts the rotation, but it stretches the bullpen thin, which was a nice strong point, even without Mariano.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I to me, what I pulled away from that series was I can now understand why people hate Nick Swisher.
I love him. He's my boy.
I mean, he hits the home run on Dickey, and he's rounding the bases with the biggest,
poop-eating grin,
and it's just like, and then he goes in the dugout, and I tweeted about this, but I was, what is with the water bottle in the dugout? Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
They come back, and this happened after Cano's home run, too. They sit down. They have some dudes from the training staff come over with a water bottle and just spritz them with the water bottle, and they do like this
miss
effeminate.
In the face.
Yeah, the miss in the face, and I'm like, come on. That's just obnoxious. Like, that's just, you know, and that's...
Stop being a hater, Neil. You're hating right now. If it was hot, it's like 150 degrees in City Field, especially in
Boston. You can't spray yourself in the face with
water
bottle.
I'm sure he can spray himself, but if someone's willing to spray you in the face, your trainer coming off the field just hitting a home run, you're going to stand there and wear it. You're not going to go, oh, let me spray myself.
Well, if Chris Bosh can spray himself with champagne in the face.
That's way fruitier than anything that either of those two did after hitting bomb home runs, back-to-back home runs nonetheless. Swisher is my boy. I'll tell you this, a little aside. I'm going to go do a little Uncle Jimmy story time aside. I have a plan one of these days to go to batting practice early with tins and try to get Swisher's attention and give him a tin, figure out what he dips, have him sign a tin, and then come back with a log of what he dips next time to try to rub elbows with some Yankees. And, you know how I'm trying to get into the business and try to network. Network through dip, baby. Skull is the ultimate ultimate bond. It's a brotherhood.
You should come out with your own line of spittoons and see if he'll endorse that.
Swisher spittoons. I'm going to get Anthony Davis's lawyers on that and trademark all that for me.
So Yankees are looking good. I don't see them faltering, unless injuries come back. They have Gardner come back eventually, I guess.
Yeah, that'll be big for them.
The injection. So, and, they don't really have to worry about anyone else in the AL East. I think Boston is definitely surging at this point.
Yeah.
But this is not an understatement or overstatement to say, but, it's always going to be a crazy situation when Bobby V is at the helm. I mean, the guy, something about his presence and the way that he acts and behaves, it's conducive to just, craziness.
Yeah.
When he was at the Mets.
He was a lightning rod.
When he was at the Mets, it was like there was always something else going on in the bullpen, the dugout, in the locker room that just drove you nuts. It's like, yo, get that situation under control. And now it's happening in Boston. Obviously, he was able to facilitate the Euclid trade to the White Sox. But now he has Ortiz calling Boston an S-hole, and I'll let you fill in the blanks on that. So, you have Ortiz who's having a great year, probably going to be an all-star, and then Ortiz just lights the match and throws it into the fire.
The
gasoline.
You know what I would be concerned is, and that's supposed to be like Boston's guy, too.
Exactly.
That's like Derek Jeter calling New York a poop hole. Would never, ever happen. Too much class.
Well, and I
think that's a point that Ortiz is trying to prove, is that the organization is a little classless. The fans can be classless a little bit. And you know what? Coming from a classy town like the Twin Cities of Minnesota, I'm sure he's probably just sick and tired of it.
But it's a sign of the times, the fact that they got rid of Uke and now Ortiz looks like he wants out. They're definitely transitioning, and I don't know that Bobby V is all that opposed to it. I think he wants to make it known.
I think he's the catalyst.
Yeah.
He's the lightning rod of the transition.
Exactly.
I think at this point in his mind, in the beginning of the year, he kind of let things flow, let them play out as they would play, and he got not lucky, but he ran into some hard times with his guys not playing well, and I think he eventually turned around in the front office and was like, "Listen, guys, this ain't working.
Yeah.
Look at our record; it's not getting any better." You know what? I got Dustin Pedroia calling me out when I say something about my. I'm the manager of this team. Is what he's got to be thinking. I run the show. These players don't run the show.
Yeah.
And you know what? With the lack of performance, I think a lot of those guys kind of dug their own grave, for lack of a better term, in their time in Boston. And you know what? Sometimes change is good for everybody. I think a lot of those guys, the Pedroias, the Ortizes, Euclid, obviously, they're fed up and they kind of they want out. They feel underappreciated. It did bring two World Series to the, a lot of those guys brought two World Series to the, to the city. But at the end of the day, they are acting a little bit like they're bigger than the game. And I kind of don't agree with Bobby's way of doing so or how he is, but I do agree with what he's preaching in that Boston needs to change.
Yeah, as long as you're getting results, I guess, go with it. But speaking of a former Red Sox, Curt Schilling, you probably heard about this. He started his own video game company called 38 Studios. Epic fail is what the kids say, but it basically went under. It went bankrupt, and now he apparently, in addition to investing pretty much everything he made from baseball, and they're putting a total at like $50 million. He now owes money to government officials or some nonsense that loaned him. But what I can't understand, what I can't believe is he then went to his family and said, "I now have no cash." I don't understand how you can invest $50 million, everything you've ever worked so hard for in the major leagues, in the big show, and just go all in on a company that is just that could flounder or could fail like this.
Yeah, not only that, all on one video game.
On one video game.
One game. It wasn't even like a series of games or like a gaming company. It was just he wanted to throw together a team of people and make a game.
But I mean, I guess there are a lot worse things that you can spend it on. I feel like I would rather go like the Doc Gooden route and just get a bunch of coke and hookers.
Yeah.
I'm
blow
it that way.
Yeah, not on a creative video game for other nerds to play. I'm good on that. What I don't understand is these guys, why you have $50 million, why not just invest it somewhere?
Yeah.
Why not go buy into you can go purchase like a 401, some sort of 401k plan or something from a bank that would match some of it. I don't understand.
You could buy Facebook stock and go bankrupt and, you know.
You could buy Facebook stock now and make money on it, probably. Now you could probably make money on it.
But, yeah, so I feel for you, Kurt. I know a lot of – he's another lightning rod that makes a lot of comments and definitely has people on his bad side. But, you know, that stinks, dude. And if you need help, I'm not the one to give it to you. But,
yeah.
Hopefully you can keep your job at ESPN.
Yeah.
But so looking ahead, we have the All-Star game in a little less than 2 weeks, as we mentioned before, and you know voting is now underway.
Yeah.
You're starting to get a sense of who might be the starter. So I thought I'd just go first. And
yeah,
go with
sure.
My picks, and then you know we'll compare and contrast or whatever.
Yeah.
So let's start in the American League at first base. I have this is kind of a two-man race between Paul Konerko and Prince Fielder. And even though Paul, you know, from a superficial standpoint, looks like he's playing better and has the better numbers, I decided to go with Prince.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Prince got off to kind of a bad start, a slow start. He's coming around now, and you know, I'm just in love with that swing. And
he's got the sweetest swing.
I just love that swing.
It's the second sweetest to Robbie Cano, but for such a big man,
yeah.
He is so smooth, and he whips that through the zone so quick. And he's just I was actually part of my argument. We had an argument, not an argument. We had a discussion in December about you know who would you sign, Pujols or Fielder. And my part of my argument was for Fielder was that he's a lefty, and that swing is just so fluid and smooth.
Yeah.
He could swing like that till he's 80.
Yeah. At second base, there's no argument here. I mean, it's got to be Robbie Cano. There's no one else that comes close to him. At short, I actually have Mike Aviles from Boston. This is a position where you could go with a different couple. There are two or three people that you could probably go with, but
Jeter's
got the popular vote.
Yeah, and he's got the
number
this year offensively.
He does have decent numbers.
He's in over 300, man.
Over 300. He's got seven dongs and you know 25 RBIs, something like that.
Yeah.
Pretty
good at leadoff.
At leadoff, definitely. But when I was looking at, you know, who I would pick, you know, definitely OPS was a major consideration of mine. If I didn't go with Mike Aviles, Derek Jeter was not my second pick. I would have gone with Asdrubal. I don't even know how to pronounce it.
Asdrubal
Cabrera as my number two pick. And, you know, when it comes down to it, you know, like I said to Mike Dean numerous times, I'm a numbers guy. You know, I like to see production. I like to see getting on base,
mm-hmm.
getting hits.
Totally.
Scoring runs, hitting in runs. And those are the factors that took into consideration. And, you know, Derek Jeter is definitely at a disadvantage being in the leadoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree there. I mean, you know, like you said, he's got the popular vote, he's got the tenured vote, but I myself have picked Asdrubal Cabrera. And it was between him and Jeter because, you know, I didn't even look at any numbers. I just, off my top of my head, like I was a fan voting. I figured that's how I would do it. That's how it gets chosen. So I you know I obviously took into consideration some numbers and whatnot, but I didn't even go into the stats. So that's good. We got the sabermetric view and you, my man, and then we got the fan sitting in Citi Field with 6 years in my view. Beautiful.
You're the Brad Pitt and I'm the Jonah Hill in this money ball game.
I'll take that.
So I can now eat a lot more. That's great.
Yeah, you got a lot of weight to gain, my man. You're fat in that movie, huh?
Woo. At third base, Miguel Cabrera. Again, this comes down to the other people I was considering were Edward and Carter Nacion from Toronto and Adrian Beltre in Texas. But, you know, for me, Miguel is just, he mashes.
Yeah.
In the outfield, I had Jose Bautista, Josh Hamilton, and Mark Trumbo. I actually had Adam Jones initially slotted in as my third guy in the AL in the outfield. But then I looked at what Trumbo has done, and I just feel like he gives the Angels a better chance to win, and all around he just seems like a spark plug for that team. You know, you look at in terms of OPS, it's .995, which absolutely just demolishes Adam Jones with .899.
What about that guy Mike Trout?
Mike Trout was another consideration of mine. You know, but same respect, I think. he'll have to be like an alternate. I don't know. I feel like he's got you know, a hell of a career ahead of him. That's for sure. And then at DH, this was between Adam Dunn and David Ortiz, and I had to give the edge to David Ortiz because he has a better eye and he doesn't strike out. I mean, 121 strikeouts on the season for Adam Dunn
already.
121. That is just obnoxious. And he was on the Dan Patrick Show today, and he'll be the first to tell you that he does not want to talk about numbers.
Adam's on base percentage 350. That's impressive.
Well, he either hits
he either goes yards or strikes out.
Yeah, basically.
He's a limited contact type of guy, huh?
Yeah. If he makes contact, it's going over the fence, basically. That's the notebook on Adam Dunn.
So he's got 22 singles. That's ridiculous.
No triples, which is shocking.
No.
So going over the National League, first base, no question here. Joey Votto is just absolutely pulverizing the ball. At second base, I actually went with Brandon Phillips on this, and I'd like to hear your take on it because I think this is a position that could have gone a couple ways. You have Aaron Hill, who's kind of an underrated player from the Diamondbacks. You also have Dan Uggla. Dan Uggla, to me, has the better numbers from a power standpoint. He walks a lot more. But I just cannot stand Dan Uggla.
I don't like him either, but I actually picked him because I like his pop and I like what he brings offensively to the lineup. But yeah, he just wore one size bigger of a shirt. One, just one. I understand, you know. I don't like the sleeve touching my elbows either, Danny. It's fine, but dude, you look like it's painted on your body. One size big, an extra medium, not a smedium. Extra medium.
Just go body paint, bro. Just let it go.
Right?
Just go for it. So you had Uggla, I had Phillips. I just like Phillips the way he wears his hat.
Yeah, I like that too. I like
tried Phillips. That.
I forgot about him actually, to be honest with you. He's a really good player.
I tried doing that, and I told I would get stabbed if I wore that around like that. I now wear it like a 12-year-old girl. So at shortstop, this is going to be a controversial pick, but I just watched him play against the Mets, and there's something about this kid. He's young, but there's something about him that I just like. And that's Starlin Castro from the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he among shortstops in the National League, he has the most RBIs. He has the most triples. He has the best average. He's second for stolen bases. Sorry, he's tied for second for stolen bases. And he has the most hits. I think that's a guy that if he can get his mind right and get his head straight and really focus on the game and get serious about it, that he could be a superstar.
Yeah, he's probably the worst fielder.
Oh yeah.
He's probably one of those guys like a Henry Ramirez that might need a position change.
Yeah. No, that's definitely in store. And of course, I despise.
He's a great player.
I despise Rafael Furcal. There's no way in conscience I could pick him.
I thought you were going to pick your boy. Jose.
No,
he's dead to me. Jose.
Yeah.
Missed that, my fan?
He'll pull a hammy or something like that.
In the All-Star game.
He's having a horrible year. I mean, he's not having a horrible year, but he's not having that great a year.
He had a really bad start.
Really bad start, you know, 350 OBP, and, I mean, only 16 stolen bases, so he's stealing bases, but I don't even know that those are the numbers that you want out of him.
So nah, they didn't sign him for those numbers.
And then the other pick you could go with is Jed Lowrie from Houston. You know, another guy who's underrated.
The guy that gets out of Boston and thrives too.
Yeah, exactly. Get out of Boston, David Ortiz. Get out of Boston. And so behind the dish, I have this goes completely counterintuitive to my whole line of reasoning, my logic. I went with Yadier Molina, who is probably one of the most hated Cardinals in the history of Mets and Mets opponents. Like, you know, Mets fans hate this guy. He's the one who hit the home run in the NLCS to ruin the Mets' chances of going to the World Series. And, you know, but the other option is Carlos Ruiz, who is a Philly. So
he's good too, though.
He's unbelievable. I mean, you know, 10 home runs, 41 RBIs before today's games. You know, second among catchers in hits, leads catchers in doubles.
Wow, he's hitting 361.
And he's hitting 361. And that was, you know, that was what a lot of people are going to criticize me for that pick. Like, you can't hit 361 and not make the All-Star team. But, you know, I got to go with Molina because he produces, you know. And he doesn't strike out. You know, he walks and he doesn't strike out. And, you know, his on-pace percentage plus slugging is not as good as Carlos Ruiz. Carlos Ruiz is off the charts. But, again, he's a Philly and he sucks, so I can't do
that. Yeah.
And then pitchers, I don't know if we want to do pitchers, but...
I picked one starter.
One starter? Okay.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Who do you have?
Who did I have for NL?
Yeah.
I Matt Cain.
Matt Cain is a great choice. He did have a perfect game.
I have him on my fantasy team, too.
A legitimate perfect game.
Yeah.
And he's on your fantasy team.
A little bit of a homer pick, but...
I mean, I got to go with the homer pick as well. If we're going to go with one guy, I got to go with Ari Dickey.
That's
I know.
Cool.
I know that he kind of... He really took a couple steps back against the Yankees.
Yeah.
But, you know... They threw out a stat that Sunday night that just blew my mind. They threw out a lot of stats over the past two or three starts. But the stat that they threw out was there hasn't been a pitcher since 1900 with the kind of stat lines that Ari Dickey has had.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
112 years ago.
Yeah, the combination of the ERA and the whiff and all that
with
stuff,
the
right?
With the whiff,
yeah.
The ERA, you know, what have you, the whole stat lines from left to right. No other pitchers have that since 1900, and I couldn't ignore that when picking.
Yeah.
When picking him. So, if we had to pick a DH in the National League, I don't know if I mentioned that to you, but I would go with Giancarlo Stanton.
Okay.
I know McCutcheon's putting up some pretty decent numbers, but Stanton's just a solid dude. He just
right.
looks like a DH that can mash. And so, you know, I figure if you know, I don't mind giving up home runs to him because it looks so pretty.
Yeah, he's so good.
In the AL, we didn't really name a pitcher, but if I had to go with a pitcher, I got to go with Justin Verlander. I mean, I know that he had a rough spot there for a while, for a couple of starts, but it looks like he's back on his game, and, you know, he just... Was that...
No, continue.
So I just feel like, you know, he's my guy on the bump. I got to go with him.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Did you go through your NL outfield, my man?
Oh, NL outfield.
Yeah,
sorry,
that's what I kind of, you know... I was wondering what was going on there.
The NL is so good, we don't need an outfielder.
No, you don't need. It's all infielders. We're just going to hit ground ball, 6-4-3 double plays all day.
Well, you know, when you have RA on the mound, you don't need an outfielder.
They hit those fly balls so high, you just need a shortstop to go get everything.
Right, just make sure it's not Luis Castillo. So in the outfield, I had, it pains me to say it, but Carlos Beltran, his numbers are out of control. Put him in right. Ryan Braun, even though he is on numerous PEDs, please don't sue us, will put him in left. And then Carlos Gonzalez from the Rockies, who a lot of Yankees fans, calling up Francesco, suggested that they should go after Carlos Gonzalez. Do you agree with that?
The Yankees?
Yes.
I don't think so. I mean, it would be nice to have him. He's a young, great hitter who would crush the ball at Yankee Stadium, but I think the Yankees offensively are kind of okay right now.
Yeah.
Maybe a bench bat or an extra platoon
but
guy.
But you wouldn't put
especially if Gardner coming back.
Yeah, but you wouldn't put it beyond the Yankees to pick up some huge name that they'll just throw in to pitch it. Down
but
the
I don't think that the Yankees. I think the Yankees are moving away from that because I really do think they want to get under that $189 million mark by 2014, which is going to significantly impact their luxury tax situation. So I think that they're moving away from that. And hence the reason that they're trying to stockpile power arms. They know that's the most expensive in Pineda and the other kid Montero deal.
Montero.
And I think that they're moving away from it. But, you know, if they did that, I think they would be trading away a guy like a Brett Gardner, a piece.
Yeah.
Because they would just try to upgrade maybe that position if they think they could for a cheap discount. I mean, if you could trade Gardner and a prospect for him, that's worth it.
Yeah.
But I don't want to mortgage the farm system or have to trade like a guy like a Swisher and a guy, you know? The Swisher means so much to their team, and he's a heart and soul guy, you know? I don't. Or even like a Chavez, who's really got value coming now off the bench playing first and third. But
so you're no on Gonzalez.
I'm no.
Okay. So those are our all-star squads. I mean, what do you think? Do you think this is going to be another classic game? Do you think it's going to be competitive? Are you going to tune in and be excited about it? Or is it going to be something that, you know, it's going to, you know, going to become something like the NBA?
I always tune into the all-star stuff. I really enjoy the home run derby. I enjoy the all-star game because you know that the guys are giving at least 90% out there. You know, I mean, they're the guys are trying to, you know, they're trying to strike out the other guy and the other guys, you know, trying to get hits. It's not like, you know, they're not playing defense like the NBA or they're not hitting like the NFL. You know, it's similar to hockey. And, you know, although hockey, they don't really hit, but you can kind of play a game of hockey and still play hard and not really hit and hit a little bit. So I kind of agree. Like, you know, in the All-Star game, you're probably not going to see somebody go in too hard to second base, nor pull a Pete Rose and run over the catcher. So they're not playing it as hard. You know, it's making it similar to hockey, but. I think that it's going to be a good competitive game, and you know, I know that the NL wants to continue that streak, and the AL wants that game back. That's for sure.
I'm actually looking forward to it, and you know, despite a lot of the big names not coming back for the Home Run Derby, I'm looking forward to that as well. I think that's always a good show. Really, really quick, we only have a couple minutes left, but I thought we'd touch on a couple points. Before we get out of here and sign off, the college football playoff system, the new one has been announced. It now looks like it's going to be a 14 playoff. It's going to start in the 2014 season, 2 years from now. I disagree with it. I mean, everyone's saying, oh, well, it's such a positive step forward. At least they're making some progress. But I'm thinking, why take baby steps when you know what works and you know what will definitely put all the naysayers to bed, and that's an 18 playoff?
I actually kind of like it.
Yeah.
The only thing that fears me is the selection committee. Who's going to be on that? Is it going to be one of those things where it's like not really the four best teams and a team from every conference?
Well, you got Jerry Sandusky.
Yeah.
He's on the board.
Yeah, right. Jim Tressel.
Yeah, but goes to Joe Paterno.
Yeah, right. I was going to say him, but I thought that was a little too soon. I like it. I think the 14 playoff is good. I like the fact that there's going to be kind of a semifinal and a final matchup in football. At this level, I think that's all they need. And the reason why is if you take a look at those teams, 7, 8, 9, you know, the South Carolinas, Virginia Tech from last year, were they really as good as the top two teams? No. So I don't know if they necessarily earned the right to play for a national championship by being the 8th best team in the league. Because, you know, there are a few powerhouse teams in college football that are going to kind of live in those 7 to 15 ranges, even when they're not that good. So I kind of like it the way it is. I think it's the right amount. I think actually what I would have done is I would have made it gone a little outside the box and made it a little more like the NFL and made it 6 teams, giving
yeah.
those first two teams a bye
yep.
for earning those first two spots.
Exactly.
And giving, because, you know, the 5th or 6th team, best team in the country, depending on schedule, could maybe put up a fight, you know. You take a look at teams like, I know last year it was a 1-2-3. The top 5 teams were Alabama, LSU, Arkansas, Stanford, and OK State. I think all those teams, and Oregon, you throw Oregon in a bunch. Those teams are good enough to play for a national championship.
Yeah.
But I don't think you get down to, like, you know, the Virginia Tech and the South Carolinas, that they were that good. So that's my own personal viewpoint on it. And I do like 4 teams as opposed to 8.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the 16 format with the 2 byes up top is preferable. It just I just want to see what TCU and Boise State can do, because it seems like they always rest on that. Well, we're undefeated, but we never got to play for the title. So I just want to almost want to see them play just so they can shut up.
I'll tell you what they can do, and Boise State's doing it. We can eat. You can just jump, and you know, you propel yourself to another conference that's a little bit above what you have, and then try to jump into the Pac-10 or Pac-12, whatever they call it now.
Yeah, I mean, Boise State going to the Big East and TCU going to the Big East, I don't think that's going to
– it gives them a big
– it gives them
a major BCS
conference
that they're in now. It gives them more percentage points in the computer, because instead of beating up whoever they beat up in those dopey conferences, you know, Southeast Texas State and Montana State, they're going to beat up UConn.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I wish they would get it right the first time and not have to redo it over again, because then we have to wait till, what, 2025 or something like that?
Yeah, we'll
I'll be dead by then, so.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm making it to that.
That's it for this week's show. We're sorry we're so late. You know, we're not the most tech-savvy guys,
yeah.
But,
we really do need you, Tony.
Yeah, Tony D, we miss
Tony
you, dude.
D. Without our tech guy and our leader.
Without our leader and our tech guy, we're like
two
little
guys.
Babies.
Flapping.
Swimming around in our filth.
Flapping in a breeze.
We have no idea. But
I had fun, though. I had a blast.
It was fun. You know, we got through a lot, and we still had a lot to get through, but maybe we'll pop up on the website or we'll discuss it next week. Anyway, that's it for us this week. Thanks for listening. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, and visit us at tristatesportsguys.com. We'll see you next week.
Later.
Peace.
Considering the technical difficulties, I thought it was pretty decent.
Yeah.
I think we did pretty well.
Yeah.
That sucked in the beginning.